It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
All right, it's only an hour. It's Jeff, it's Jordan. Big thanks to Rodney. Jordan, where are you? I know you're a LeBron fan. Where are you at on – we're just talking – I don't know if you caught that whole thing, but it was really along the lines of, dude, 10 years from now, 10 years after LeBron retires, nobody's going to remember the nuances of it. They'll just remember how awesome it was.
I mean, yeah, he's only the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah. No, sorry. I won't say like that.
Jake Bayless put this up, and I didn't want to turn this into a LeBron discussion, but I don't know if you're a soccer guy, Jordan, but Jake, I'll take your word for it. So the Argentinians would not elevate Messi above Diego Maradona until he won the World Cup, and it was a non-negotiable. So hey, but again, Messi's another one, dude. 10 years after Messi's done, like, is anybody even going to remember that debate or that argument? No. People now pretty much recognize Messi as the greatest soccer player that ever lived, pretty much, unless you're just an old head and you still want to put Pele up there or whatever. But it's we're all prisoners of the moment, I guess.
Yeah, and, like, I don't know. I loved what you said about LeBron. I've had this talk with a lot of my friends before, but, like, man, if you really think about it, LeBron is the only athlete that has ever lived up to those expectations.
And not just lived up to him. He exceeded them.
Exceeded them. Yes, he did. And he's the only athlete in the history that has exceeded these unrealistic expectations that were put on him. Because while he was still in high school, people are saying this could be the greatest player of all time. And now you can't have that conversation without him. So
he was back when this meant something. He was, I mean, the guy was solo on the cover of SI at 16. Mm-hmm. Talking about he was the chosen one.
Like, hell yeah. I mean, he was, you know. So speaking of the chosen one, can we talk about my man Anthony fucking Edwards?
Man.
You know me. I'm not very casual basketball watcher. I watch a lot of the NBA playoffs. Man, Anthony Edwards is so good for the NBA. He's so good for the NBA and is a legitimate superstar, an actual legitimate superstar. I feel like that word gets overused too much, specifically in the NBA. Anthony Edwards is a legitimate superstar, and he's the big homie, the leader of the Timberwolves' team at 22 years old. He's going to be around for a long-ass time. He's fun as hell, easy to root for, fun to watch. Like, everyone, obviously, I think Wemby is going to be the true face of the NBA. But, like, I feel so good about the future of the NBA and where it's at. And, I mean, like, I can't remember a time. I'm not including LeBron. And I've always – now that I've gotten older, it's gone from just, like, straight-up hating Curry to now it's like, look, I'm pissed the shots are going in, but, like, I'm appreciating the greatest shooter of all time. I'm going to watch him and enjoy this.
Yeah.
Like, Anthony Edwards – outside of LeBron and I guess Curry, is the most fun I've had watching an NBA player play basketball in a long time. Just the way he plays, the intensity he plays, and I love that he talks shit too. You know, there's too many people afraid to say what's going through their head, and I love how Ant just says it. So, yeah, I don't know. Did you get to see any of yesterday's game? And the Mavs-Clippers game was awesome too.
Yeah, I've watched enough of Anthony Edwards that, you know, Anthony Edwards is one of those guys that when he came out, it was like, all right, this guy's clearly talented, right? But is he, how much does he care about basketball? It's kind of the motivation, give a crap concerns that you have about some guys. But dude, part of me now wonders, like, through playing like high school ball, AAU ball, college, was Anthony Edwards just bored? Like, this bores me. I need something else. And like, he's been awesome since he got into the league. So yeah, he's fun to watch. You need, I don't want to say he's a villain, but like, you need that dude that, you know, every era has that guy, you know, Kobe was kind of that guy for his era. Like Reggie Miller was one of those guys, the guy that just he'll kick your ass and not have a single problem letting you know about it. Yeah, I dig Anthony Edwards. It's fun. You need that kind of guy. In this era, we're kind of in the post super team era now, but everybody kind of wants to be friends and get along. That's just what the NBA has been. No, I need a guy that's like, no, I'm not only am I going to kick your ass, I'm going to tell you I'm going to do it. And then after I do it, I'm going to remind you that I did it. Yeah. And how much fun it was.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean to disrespect Joker, Luka, or Giannis. And those are the current faces of the NBA, you know, including LeBron, obviously, still as well. But I just meant, you know, Wemby is going to be the face of the NBA. Like, I don't really think that's a debate. But, like, with Anthony Edwards, too, like, another thing that was so fun about getting to watch this series with the Suns is I think it was game two when him and KD were going at it. And there was this shot where Ant's kind of backpedaling down the court and he's just talking shit. And KD's there like smiling. And it's like seeing moments like that are so cool is because like we're literally seeing the torch get passed. You know what I mean?
No doubt.
And like, it's crazy because, like, I remember when it was KD was Anthony Edwards, and not that KD ever really talked shit, but you could tell he was the young guy the vets were looking at as he's going to be the face of our league. That's how they look at Anthony Edwards. So that's it feels the same, at least to me. And it makes me feel really old at 21 years old that I kind of saw KD get to go through what Anthony Edwards is going through right now. And that kind of just the ascension of a superstar.
Yeah, it's
Man, and Derrick Rose, Sticky 12. Man, I actually just finished and Terrence Brooks officially in the transfer portal, by the way, as of 1 minute ago. But no, I actually just read a book, Derrick Rose, kind of just basically an autobiography on his career, everything from his point of view. He's been quiet on a lot of those topics his whole career. So I thought that was dope. But like, yeah, Anthony Edwards gives a lot of D Rose vibes, kind of, you know, just make sure those knees stay healthy.
Yeah, I just want to go back to something that was said about, you know, Joker and Luka and Giannis. Mm-hmm. You know, the NBA goes in eras, right? You had, you know, Magic and Bird, Dr. J, Isaiah, kind of that you had their time. Then it goes into, you know, you've got Jordan, Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing, David Robinson. Basically, the Dream Team guys had their run. Then you pass it on, and it's more so it's Shaq, it's Kobe, you know. Vince Carter, if you want to throw him in there, Dirk, kind of that late 90s to mid 2000s run. And then it's LeBron and Carmelo and D Wade. It's their league. And, you know, Steph and KD come in and have their that group comes in and has their Kyrie's in that mix too. And now it's time for a new core to be the focal point of the league. And it's kind of those guys. It's, you know, Giannis already has a ring, Joker's got two, you know, Luka's fun to watch. Anthony Edwards, but kind of the guys that came in the league kind of in that 2015-16 window up until, you know, 2020, those are the guys that are running the league now.
Yeah, and like I'm sure Adam Silver is just so pleased that they had another young star kind of emerge to take the heat away from Ja Morant. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm sure they weren't super excited about him being the guy coming along, and they're blessed Wemby's really turning out to be what everyone expected.
No, I mean, Ja Morant can't keep his head straight, and then he's hurt, and then, you know, Zion can't get out of his own way. So if either one of those guys ever got it together, you know, they'd be in that group too. But I can appreciate watching greatness. Like, I'll be honest, I've not been – at all ever the biggest Tom Brady fan in the world, but I know when I'm watching something great and it was awesome to watch, but I was never a Tom Brady fan.
No, I feel you on that too. And I never really was a Tom Brady hater, even when he got caught cheating. Like, everyone cheats, you know what I mean? Everyone does it. So, and it's like, that's the same thing as like, I don't like Oregon State fans getting upset about people tampering with Damian Martinez. Like, Oregon State's tampering with some bullshit schools you've never heard of before.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, everyone tampers, you know? So,
yeah.
I'm never going to bitch about it. Just don't get caught, you know?
And Nick Saban pretty much confirmed that during the draft, in case anybody was wondering.
Yeah, and like CB, you talking about how he is ineligible and the whole like SAT thing with D Rose. Like, I never really felt a certain type of way about that. Like, was the SAT affecting him on the basketball court? No. But I do get it. I get it. But me personally, I wasn't. Same thing with Reggie Bush. Like, did that house USC put his family in? Did that win him the Heisman? You know what I'm saying? So, how did you feel about that as someone, you know, who was definitely much more present during the Reggie Bush college days?
Getting his Heisman back or just the whole scandal?
I guess first him getting his Heisman back in 2024.
I was fine with him getting it back. He kind of volunteered. It's just weird the way it happened. Like, he didn't have to give it to the Heisman Trust. He did that himself. It's like you see it, you know, with NIL, the landscape changes. Like, hey, wait a minute. Give me that back. I want that back now. Jake said it. I've said it on Twitter. I've said it for years. Vacating wins and giving back awards is the dumbest form of punishment that there is in sports. Like, yeah. I watched Reggie Bush win the Heisman that year. Like, I watched the Heisman ceremony. I'm pretty sure I remember what happened, how the voting went. Like, I didn't dream that. It actually happened. So, you know, if you it's kind of like the Michigan Final Four banners, like that whole deal.
Yeah. I saw someone on Twitter be like, yo, if we're giving Reggie his shit back, we got to put those banners back.
That was me that said that.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw it from anybody else, but I know I said that. Like, it's like you look at these scandals and the schools are like, oh, we're embarrassed and this is not us. Yeah. Yeah. Guess what? University of Michigan, did you have any problem taking in that money that the Fab Five generated for your university, the money that it generated for the athletic department? I'm sure it made your university more visible. I'm sure applications went up. I'm sure donations went up. I'm sure your endowment grew. You didn't have a problem with that, but all of a sudden, we got a big scandal. We got to strip these banners, and shame on you, basketball program. It's the hypocritical nature sometimes, Jordan, of just higher education that just I don't know who this appeases. I don't know what this proves, but like, you know what? Was Rick Pitino a slime ball? Yeah, Louisville knew that when they hired him. But there is no honor among thieves in college basketball, man. Let Louisville just hang their banner. But everybody's going to know it's stained. Like, everybody's going to know, like, oh, yeah, you had a slime ball coach and you were doing this, that, and the other behind the scenes. Whatever the case is, like, I think, you know, having to give back championship rings and take down banners and give back trophies, it's the dumbest thing, the absolute dumbest thing ever.
How would you feel if they took Michigan's title away? That is different.
Okay. Yes, that's different because to me, and I'm going to sound like I'm talking out both sides of my mouth, but take this ride with me. If you're cheating to get recruits, you're cheating to get players. That to me is not as bad as, and you can certainly look at cheating to get players as, you're dishonoring the integrity of the game. But knowingly going around, knowingly not just circumventing the rules, but almost without compunction, just breaking the rules to steal signs, to really cheat the integrity of the game, that doesn't sit too well with me. But I don't think you're gonna, yeah. And put this comment up from Sticky. This is the big thing. Do fans even care? They already celebrated the victory. If Michigan got that national championship taken away in 5 years, like, the Michigan fans across the country aren't going to retroactively go back. They can't go back and be like, well, let's uncelebrate that championship and burn all the gear from it. No, you're going to remember that championship. So, I don't know. I have much more of a problem with stuff like sign stealing and signal stealing and what the Patriots did. I have more of a problem with that than paying players and cheating to get players, especially at that time, because, again, how much money – did Reggie Bush generate for the University of Southern California and their athletic department and their school? He deserved to get his. That to me is different, and I'll always look at that as different, and that's why I've got no problem. To me, the transfer portal and roster movement, to me, it's collateral damage for getting the players access to something that should have always been theirs in the first place. So I know I'm going off on different tangents, but yeah, I can almost look the other way when it comes to cheating to get players, but cheating during a game, in-game cheating, altering the outcome of the game, challenging the integrity of the game, that's the kind of stuff where I'm like, all right, the line's got to be drawn somewhere.
Yeah, man, I just – can we get to the bottom of who that was on Central Michigan's sideline? You know what I mean? Like, did we ever fully confirm or not? You know what I mean? For the love of God, can we have someone go dig some shit up on UCF in 2016 so we can vacate that? You know what I mean? We got to get the NCAA on them. Eric Henry's.
Was it someone other than Connor Stallions on the Central Michigan sideline?
No, but there wasn't – like, look, there was all these different people on Twitter and all these – I don't know, just – dumbasses online, like, investigating stuff on their own. But, like, we never got actual proof from the NCAA or Central Michigan or Michigan being like, hey, yeah, that guy actually was Connor Stallions, you know?
What's always – here's the other thing, too, Jordan, that always bothered me with NCAA investigations. And it's not selective enforcement, and I truly believe there was a time where that did happen. But like Dez Bryant, I know you don't remember, but Dez Bryant got in trouble. He basically missed pretty much all of his last year at Oklahoma State because, if I remember right, he went to a Cowboys game and there was some involvement with an agent. There was some stuff that basically some impermissible benefits that he accepted. And the reason why Dez Bryant got punished by the NCAA wasn't necessarily because he took the whatever gifts were offered to him. It was because he lied to the NCAA. So you're going to take a kid, a kid from Dez Bryant from Lufkin, who's never seen the kind of been around, had the access to money that he's got right now. And you're going to expect him to be 100% compliant, put him in a room without a lawyer with a bunch of suits present and just expect him to tell the truth. That to me, that's just like the Jim Tressel tattoo gate at Ohio State. It wasn't that they were selling their stuff in exchange for tattoos and autographs. It was that, no, you weren't up front and forthright with the NCAA. It's like, so you really didn't care about the actual crime. You cared about the dishonesty when confronted with the crime. So it's almost like you're putting on the punishment to serve a purpose. You're trying to send a message. And that the whole hypocrisy with the NCAA is something that has just galled me for the longest time. And I, for one, could not be happier that that organization has as little influence and as little impact as humanly possible right now that they've ever had in my lifetime.
That being said, how far away do you think we are from like a Super League, Super Conference by NCAA governing body?
We got to be closer just because big time college football, man, is too big. It's too big at this point for the NCAA to govern it. I really think you've got to govern it like the NFL. I think you've got to have a commissioner. You've got to have deputy commissioners. You've got to have a different set of rules. You've got to, if you want to put a cap in place on NIL per school, per player, what's allowed to be spent. And another thing you can do, you can institute a luxury tax. You know, hey, if Texas or Ohio State or whoever wants to spend X number of dollars in NIL money to put a championship team on the field, that's their prerogative if they got that money, right? But over a certain threshold, maybe you pay a luxury tax and figure out what that luxury tax money, maybe you disperse that luxury tax money. Okay, you're this much over the luxury tax. You got to pay this much. This is going to get dispersed to athletes in your institution that otherwise don't get NIL opportunities. You're going to have to take that money that you're over and disperse it somewhere else. There's so many different ways you could do it, but yeah, you can't govern something that is going progressively forward. You can't govern it with antiquated rules.
Yeah.
You just got to adapt. And I think big time college football is at that point, man. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. You got to adapt. And, you know, let's call big time college football what it is now. It's a minor league system for the NFL. It always has been. People have just been hesitant to call it that, but let's just call it what it is now.
No, it's true. It's true. And I mean, it's why there's never been a true successful real developmental league for the NFL. And it's because they have a free one with college football.
Yeah, exactly. That's number one. And number two, I mean, it was, I love the way this was explained to me in terms of competitiveness. And it's even more so when you talk about spring league football or college football. If I'm a football fan, but I'm just an NFL fan, right? Who would I rather watch? Would I rather watch Caleb Williams on a Saturday afternoon, or would I rather watch AJ McCarron in the spring? There's no debate there, right? You know, it was explained to me. It's like, hey, would you rather? It's between the difference between like Double A and Triple A baseball and Double A baseball. Would you rather see that 19, 20 year old prospect who 2-3 years from now is going to be one of the best prospects in baseball? Would you rather see like some 35-year-old guy that's just trying to hang on maybe for one more day? Maybe he can get one more day in the majors. Like, which would you rather see? I would obviously rather see the prospects. All right. Then you probably want to watch more Double A baseball than Triple A baseball. Right. So that bad analogy, whatever. It's always been a minor league system for the NFL. It always will be a minor league system for the NFL. Now we're just calling it what it is. What NIL has done, Jordan, is it's basically taken that veil of amateurism that the NCAA has tried to put over everything, and it's taking that off. Like, you're not talking about amateurism anymore.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I think it's going to be 5 to 10 years before we see I think it'll be about another year until we really see someone actually putting steps forward for a non-NCAA governing body. But I think it'll be 5 to 10 years before it's an actual thing and it's started, minimum, for sure.
It's got to be done right. Like, you can't, yeah. This can't be half-assed. Like, you've basically got everybody that's complaining about, oh, this is so, this and this and this and this and this is wrong with college football. All right. This is going to be your chance to fix it. And you know what? I don't just want a bunch of presidents and ADs in that room trying to set these rules up and fix it. Honestly, I'm not just saying this because he's our coworker. I want somebody like Josh Pate in that room. I want Joel Klatt in that room. I want Kirk Herbstreit in that room. I want the biggest voices, the people that are most passionate in this country that have a stake in college football. I want them in that room. I say what you want about him. I want Paul Feinbaum in that room, right? I want the people that are passionate, that have a vested interest in the success of college football. I want them that really, truly want to see the game do well. They're not just an AD or a president that's just sitting back counting bank account figures. I want them to be involved in that process because that's how this thing is going to get right. You've got one shot to really do this the right way. See, Jake, I don't know. The line's got to be drawn. The line's got to be drawn somewhere. But, yeah. Man, I just, you know, I'm not, you know what I'm saying? I'm not saying those people specifically, but you got a chance to do this right. And it can be done right, but it needs to be handled with care, needs to be taken seriously. And yeah. CB asked who should be the first commissioner of college football. I thought for a long time that Mac Brown would have been a good commissioner. But you know what, man? I don't know if he wants to deal with it at this point. Tell me somebody that would be a better commissioner for college football than Nick Saban.
Yep. It's true.
Because if you want to know about the seedy underbelly of college football – Nick Saban, clearly his bag of F's to give at this point, dude, it is empty. He does not care at this point.
Speaking of empty bags of F's, you see Charles Barkley's riff with Galveston.
Man, well, I mean, you know what?
That dirty ass water.
I love going.
We ain't getting in that dirty ass water.
I love taking my family to Galveston whenever we go to the coast. There's a couple different spots you can go in Texas. You know, I love going to Port Aransas. I like going to South Padre Island, but it's just too damn far of a drive. Like, it's a freaking 7-hour drive, or five now, I guess, from where I live in San Marcos, but I digress. But you know what?
Chuck's he'd rather vacation.
Chuck's not telling a lie. Chuck's not telling a lie.
Well, hey, well, Jake, did you see they doubled back to the Galveston bit yesterday and asked him about it again because Beyonce's mom tweeted about it or some shit. And Chuck was basically like, oh, I'm sorry, Beyonce's mom. Like, I won't be bad. And then Ernie was like, so you're going to go vacation there now with your clean slate? And he was like, hell nah, I'd rather go to San Antonio with them big old women. And then he made this joke about how Victoria's Secret – it's still a secret in San Antonio. So,
good Lord.
Yeah. So, and the San Antonio women wear bloomers because they can't fit into Victoria's.
Did he mention anything about churros?
No, I don't think he brought up the churro talk this time, but he was killing Shaq. The funniest parts about like the inside the NBA riffs too is because it's just Chuck saying some dumb shit and then it's a 7'2", 300 pound man just crying like a baby. I watched like my favorite moments from that show just because they kept popping up on my Twitter this weekend. Have you seen the one where Shaq is trying to explain to them? He's like, if instead of just filling up your gas all at one time, if you just wait till it gets to half and then put in 20 each time, you're saving money. And they like asked him to explain it, and like he couldn't even make it make sense to himself, and like he still kept going and is like, no, you save money. There's another one.
Anytime on that show, man, anytime Shaq falls down, it's good TV.
Another one that was funny was they were talking about the moon for some fucking reason. And have you seen that one?
No.
They asked Shaq how long he thinks it would take to get to the moon. And he was like, probably about 10, 11 hours. And they were like, what makes you think 10, 11 hours? And he was like, well, this is almost verbatim what he said. He's like, I can look up and see the moon right now. I can't see California, and California is about 4 to 5 hours away. So I'm thinking the moon's probably about 10 to 11. And that was like his reasoning. So
I love that show, yeah. Man. The banter on that show is awesome.
It's funny too because like half the time when like you get into the really funny riffs, you can hear the producers laughing in the background.
What was it? There was one they were talking about playing TV character. They were talking about who would play them on, you know, basically if Inside the NBA was a movie, like who would play them. Oh no, they were talking about who gets mistaken for people, and Shaq goes, yeah, I get mistaken for people sometimes. And Kenny Smith goes, who do you get mistaken for? And Charles Barkley would just, without miss a beat, goes, Shrek. And you can, all you hear is like crew and production laughing, and Shaq's like death staring people. Man, it's so awesome.
The best is when Shaq and Chuck start calling each other fat, and one of them will be like, no, bro, I'm fat. You're obese. And they'll do that too. Another one, this actually might, I keep saying this for all their bits, but this one might actually be my favorite. This was like 5 or 6 years ago when they were talking about how the cops got called to the Staples Center. Yeah. And him and Shaq are just losing it. They're like, they needed a police presence. And they started, because apparently they're mocking Blake Griffin. They're like, police, this is Blake Griffin. Chris Paul's about to beat me up. There it is, losing. Just go look up Inside the NBA Best Moments. I promise you, you'll get some laughs.
I love that show, man. I wish the NFL had something like that, but it's just, I don't know. It's either too contrived. I don't know. It's just because it's Sunday mornings, but it's either too contrived or too straight laced.
I think so Inside the NBA, you have Chuck, who actually gives some pretty good analysis sometimes. Most of the time, it's just comedic relief. Shaq is kind of the same position. And then Ernie kind of directs everything, keeps everything in check. And then Kenny, I mean, I don't know, whatever you want to call his role. But think about all these NFL shows. Most of the time, it's like one or two people who actually know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. A former player who provides literally zero value most of the time. And then most of the time, a woman who tends to be pretty good at a job, usually one of the stronger people on the crew. Usually the weak link is the former player.
Yeah.
So the NFL, I feel like all of them, each crew has at least one guy that, like, not that I necessarily can't stand, but it's like, all right, you're done talking. Like Booger, any set he's on, it's like, you know what I mean? Where it feels like the NBA, I don't know, they might have more flexibility for, like, it just feels like NFL crews have all kind of been ruined where there's at least one super bad weak link. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Man, I didn't get this email in my inbox today from the home office, but apparently CB just alerted me to this, and I'm looking at it now. Apparently CBS making changes to the NFL today. Matt Ryan joining the NFL today. Phil Simms and Boomer Esiason both out. So it'll be, I guess it'll be Matt Ryan, Bill Coward, Nate Burleson, and James Brown on the NFL today.
Mm. Yep. I probably recognize just all those guys, but only know so many by name.
That doesn't do a whole lot for me. The Fox show is okay. I mean, that's probably the closest one you've got in the NFL to what Inside the NBA has, with Terry Bradshaw, Michael Strahan, Jimmy Johnson whenever he's there, and then Howie Long and Kurt Menefee.
Yeah. Which draft broadcast did you watch? You watched ABC one the whole time?
I had the volume muted, I'll be honest, because I was listening to the Ticket in Dallas, because Norm Hitzkus and Bob Sturm were doing the draft. So I listened to the Ticket. I went back and forth. I think the first round, I know I had NFL Network, and I think the second round, from the second round on, is pretty much the ABC broadcast I have muted. I'd turn the volume up every now and then if they were discussing a Texas pick or something, or the camera was on Nick Saban and he was saying something. So,
yeah, I was on NFL Network until I saw Mike Rodak's tweet about Saban admitting to tampering, and then I flipped to ABC. And luckily, it was just in time to get the – how far has this family came? We came from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Baton Rouge,
Louisiana.
So what are your thoughts as a Cowboys fan yourself about the strategy of not drafting the most valueless position in football, and instead signing Ezekiel Elliott, bringing him back home to the Triple D? What are your thoughts on there?
Well,
and also, I know most people who watch the show are Cowboys fans as well. Would love to see y'all's thoughts in the comments as well, because it's like, you dummies couldn't have screwed up the Jonathan Brooks thing more. And as someone who wants the best for Jonathan Brooks and JT Sanders, hate to see him go to the Panthers. I know everyone is like, look at this new skill room they have. Xavier Leggett, JT Sanders, Jonathan Brooks, Bryce Young. I will give one of y'all, I don't know, a high five, if you can name me one starting offensive lineman for the Panthers. Because I can't, you know. So thoughts on the
Michael Orr's not with the Panthers anymore, is he?
I don't even think he's in the league anymore.
He hadn't been in the league for a minute.
Yeah.
Look, if you like a guy, if you like a player, maybe, just maybe, the night before the second round starts, don't drone on and on and on and on and on about how much you like that player. Just a hint of advice. It's no secret. It was the worst kept secret. It was to the point where it wasn't even a secret. Word had been leaking out for weeks that the Cowboys are taking Jonathan Brooks at 56. And I'll give our guy Nick Harris a little bit of credit. Actually, a lot of credit, because when we had Nick on the day before the first round started, He said, they'll take Jonathan Brooks at 56. And Nick said, I don't think he's getting to 56. I'm like, surely he'll be there. But no, I don't know why the Panthers did it. I mean, they still got Chuba Hubbard. They're paying Miles Sanders money, whatever. But it's insanely idiotic to just put it out there exactly what your plans are.
Yeah.
And it's a typical Jerry Jones pick. That was going to be his pick in the second round. Like I said, I'm almost convinced now they give him one pick a year and let him make it. And he just got so excited that Jonathan Brooks was going to be his pick.
Yeah. Well, at least he remembered, Jonathan Brooks. He forgot how the draft order comes about just a couple days before. So, and I know this is obviously purely banter, and I might upset you even just by throwing this on the screen. What do you do in this situation? What would you do hypothetically? Would you remain a Cowboys fan if they made Deion Sanders the head coach and drafted Shador?
I can say no. I can say no that I'll be off the bandwagon, but man, my fandom with the Cowboys is like that toxic relationship. It's almost like if you're, I guess if you're in one of those marriages, if you read enough Reddit posts, you'll find that allegedly they exist. But if you're in just one of those marriages where you're both kind of resigned to the fact that this doesn't work, but neither one of you really wants to do anything else, so you just kind of coexist. That's kind of where my fandom with the Cowboys is right now. That would be it if that happened. I'd be like, yeah, I'll still watch Cowboys games, but I know how this is going to end. You're not winning a Super Bowl with that formula. You know? So I don't know, man. It's depressing to think about how many Hall of Fame caliber players that have come through that organization since 1995, February 96, and how many primes of Hall of Fame caliber players have been just pissed away by bad decisions Jerry has made. Because he's got the final say. He's got the final say.
Jera.
With their draft, I mean, they drafted some pieces. I mean, I love the pick. My favorite pick that they made was getting Cooper Beebe. Of all the picks they made, I think that's a guy that's going to come in and help them right away.
I mean, arguably the safest pick anyone could have made. I mean, he is the classic, like, incredibly high floor, but like he's close to, you know, he's closer to his ceiling than most. I wouldn't say close to his ceiling, but closer to his ceiling than most. And I mean, look, the Guyton pick isn't horrible. I hung out with Nick over the weekend, so I can remember if this is him saying this or you saying this on the show on Friday, but like someone brought up that like Tyler Guyton is either going to be an all pro or he's not getting a second contract, yeah. And there's no in between.
I said that on Friday. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel the same.
There is an in between.
I feel the same way too. And like, look, I think best case scenario, I don't think it'll happen, especially just because of all the dynamics with the way the franchise is currently. But like, best case scenario, man, they give Guyton a redshirt year and would kick Tyler Smith out to tackle for one season.
Yeah.
They're not going to do that though. But, like, that's the smartest thing to do. Because Cooper Beebe can come in and start day one, right? Easy. Just figure out a spot in the interior. He can start. He'll figure it out. Don't worry about him. And Guyton, on the other hand, like, as a 49ers fan, if you're going to roll out a Cowboys offensive line that doesn't have Tyron Smith and one of your tackles is Tyler Guyton, who started playing football as a senior in high school, I'm going to feel pretty damn good as a 49ers fan. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just like, man – it's such a big part of a young player's, development and the way their development can be accelerated, decelerated is confidence. And he's going to get eaten alive at different points during his rookie year if they just throw him out there, yeah. Which they're going to probably do. But again, like man, you can like really boost the chances of him actually turning into an all-pro player, a second contract type of player, if you just sit him, even if it's just the first half of the year, even, you know.
Yeah, so. I I really like this. There is no more fitting of a first line of a draft review. Looking at the various draft grades, our draft analysts at CBS have handed out. Chris Trapasso gave the Cowboys a C+, and he starts his write up, Jordan, with "I personally am not sure what the Cowboys are doing." Well, Chris, you're not alone in that and wondering what the hell they're doing with this draft class. I understand they didn't have a lot of draft capital. They tried to make it work, but there's just a lot, especially, man, after last year's draft was so bad. And it's no fault of DeMarvian Overshown that he got hurt, but I mean, you got little to nothing out of your draft class last year. I mean, Mozzie Smith's already one of those guys that I'm like, dude, is this dude going to even be on the team by the time they have to decide on his fifth year option as a first round pick? Like it went that bad last year. So, you know, the Cowboys have been known to have one of these classes. I think, what was it, their 20, whatever year the Tristan Hill draft was, it 2019, I think they had one of those classes. But maybe they rebounded. Maybe this class is really good. I don't know. But the draft just reinforced the sizable holes, the numerous holes, the quantity of holes that this roster has, and the fact that you weren't going to fix them all in this draft, number one. And number two, you didn't do a whole lot to address it in free agency. Man, I had to turn in my writer's poll for Dave Campbell's Texas Football for the summer magazine. I did the writer's poll this year. Never done it before, so shout out to William Wilkerson for thinking about me on the writer's poll. And I had to give everybody has to give a record prediction for the Cowboys. I said 10-7 just because I know they're going to play some bad teams. Like, thankfully, you get to play the Giants and Washington twice a year. But I don't see them, Jordan, doing really anything of significance. I mean, that they're it's either 9-8 or 10-7, and typically they usually balance out losing a game or two they shouldn't with winning a game or two they shouldn't. I don't think they're going to be terrible. I just think they're going to sink a little bit more to average this year.
I think in 12-5, maybe 13-4. Really get the
17-0. Why not?
Well, no, we're going to be a little realistic.
Okay.
12-5, 13-4, best case scenario. You know, they're in this thing, right? The Cowboys fans, right? And they're about here. And then they're going to get to here on the cycle. Happens every year.
Get destroyed by the Packers in the playoffs and see you in August.
Yeah, they're either going to, this is what will happen. Because they're making the playoffs. They're making the playoffs. They're either smoking their first round, whoever they play, they're smoking them. Second round, they're getting killed. Or they're just getting dummied first week again. And that's it. But, like, where I'm at, and just talking to my friends who are Cowboys fans, like, how do y'all not want them to just tear it down? Because it's like, you either got to tear it down or go all in with where they're at. And I know we've talked about it.
Oh, they're all in. Didn't you hear Jerry going in the offseason? They're all in. They're all in. They're all in. All in on what? I don't know. But they're all in.
Yeah. And look, man, as someone brought it up, the division that the 49ers play in had an amazing draft. Like all four teams. Like, I'm a 49ers fan, and we got to play the Cardinals with Marvin Harrison Jr. and Christian Jones. And the dude from Tech, Dadrian Taylor, Dadrian, however the hell you say it.
Dadrian Taylor Demerson.
Can play his ass off. Like, yeah. Not looking forward to watching that guy probably turn into an all-pro. And then the Seahawks, like a Byron Murphy twice a year. Like, give me an effing break, man. And also, like, man, the NFL really let the Chiefs get Xavier Worthy and then Jared Wiley.
Not just the NFL. Like, the Bills let the Chiefs have him.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Byron's the main guy for Seahawks. None of those other names are really huge for me. I'm pissed the Rams got Fisk and Jared Verse. Like, it could, come on.
And Jordan Whittington.
Yeah, and Blake Corum.
So I'm not too worried about Blake Corum having a big NFL career. I could be wrong.
Yeah. But. So yeah, while the 49ers' main rivals are doing that, what did we do? We got ourselves a white receiver in the first round.
Pearsall.
We got ourselves a white receiver. Hey, my favorite pick is the Isaac Arendo pick. The Louisville running back, who's just a testing monster. Also like the Jacob Colling pick. But, like, as much as I love the Garendo pick, like, Christian McCaffrey still exists. You know what I mean? The Kansas guard.
Is Elijah Mitchell still on their roster?
I think so.
I know he hadn't been the same since the knee injury, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, that is true, Jake. The Cowboys draft does kind of work out like that. Well, I didn't even know that, CB.
Yeah, yeah, that's who, because everybody kept asking, well, who's the guy in the Longhorn hoodie, the UT hoodie that was in the Rams draft room? It, yeah, when your dad's the GM, okay. you get to hang out in the war room.
Yeah, I saw that. I was wondering, I'm like, who is that? Yeah. Jordan, what do you know about Jax Brown? He's Pflugerville Weiss's starting quarterback. He started a little bit as a sophomore, if I'm not mistaken. I know they rotated him with the senior they had that year. And then ended up starting last year. Like, not bad at all. Definitely a G5 talent, I think. Seen him a lot in 7-on-7, too. He's the second quarterback with Juice with Corey Daly from Seguin. So, and to be honest, like I've talked about it a lot, but the 2025 class in Austin kind of is just horrible. It kind of just feels like Adrian Wilson and then like Coleman Patton and Ramon's Adams from Bastrop and Del Valle. And, I mean, Ramon's is originally Smithville, so that doesn't even really count all the way. But I mean, I think Jax Brown is the best quarterback in 2025 in Austin. I don't really think would be really debated either. The only other guys I can really think about are Ali Scott at OBJ and Max Gerlich at Austin Anderson now. But I mean, I've seen all three of those dudes throw a lot, especially in 7-on-7. All three of those guys have actually played for Juice at different points. So I've had a lot of exposure to him. And, I mean, again, I think Brown is the best one of them all. He needs to work on consistency. I'd like to see his arm get stronger as well. I think Max Gerlich throws the best ball out of all of them, but he also struggles with consistency. But, I mean, that kid is one of the best deep balls I've ever seen thrown. It's just he's not consistent with it, which, I mean, I think that's kind of why. We kind of saw his recruitment plateau a little. You know, he also suffered some injuries as well. Yeah.
Jordan, so. I just got to direct everybody to get to Horns 24/7. The Stampede has been posted. You and Hank, great idea by you guys to collaborate on this. Recruits react to Texas record-breaking NFL draft. I know you handled the defensive recruits. Is there anybody that you think Texas in the 25 or hell, maybe even the 26 class that you think Texas, the draft made any kind of it made a significant move in their recruitment?
Look, I think
maybe you could tell they took notice of it. Put it that way.
I mean, look, I think everyone knew it was happening just because everyone saw the talent Texas had last year. That's why they were good, obviously. So I don't think anyone is really surprised by it, but now that it's actually happened, I think there are definitely, you know, a lot of recruits that are looking at it and saying, okay, wow, you know, 11 picks, the most of any school in America outside of Michigan who had 13, but Texas had 6 in the top 55. Most of Michigan's picks were towards the back half. Now keep in mind, Michigan, they're going to have more of a front-loaded draft next year. Like, they have at least 2 or 3 guys who will go in the first round next year.
Yeah.
But still, like, you know, kids are noticing that. And With the main targets in 2025, with where Texas is at with them, there's not anything new those kids have to find out about Texas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say with them. I think it helps a lot with 26. With 2026, honestly, those kids seem to, I guess, be more – I don't know if surprise is the right word, but to have taken more notice to it, if that makes sense. But, I mean, yeah, like that's always going to help, and especially because, like, man, when you go on visits, especially official visits, they got flyers, graphics, posters. They got shit everywhere all over the facility. And you know damn well when Texas went 2021 or was it 2022 without a single player getting picked, that was shoved in the face every single recruit that visited A&M, OU, you name it. Mm-hmm. Now Texas has the opportunity to do it backwards. And also all the BS or whatnot you'd hear from Texas not being able to develop their highly rated recruits or whatnot, that's all out the window. So, definitely gonna help Texas. And before we bring the guys in and I guess get out of here, I just want to talk about it real quick. We're going to have a little bit of breaking news tomorrow morning on our site. Kobe Sellers looking to trim his top schools list down a little bit more. And he'll also have something else he's going to announce. But be on the lookout for that tomorrow morning. Texas is going to make the cut. As far as, you know, where the recruitment's at, I don't like Texas, to be honest with you. OU was in an amazing spot for the majority of the spring, but as I reported, I think at the beginning of the month, A&M had really come on strong, kind of overtaken Texas, and A&M was running second, and they were kind of trading blows. As this month has gone on, weeks have gone on, his most recent visit was to A&M. And, you know, the Aggies, they're in a really good spot. Like, they're making this thing competitive for the first time. It's really felt like competitive with OU this whole spring. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's OU or A&M. Like, that's how much momentum A&M has right now and how much ground they made up. So, and we're also going to talk about it. I'm not going to be on the show today, but we're going to have some other guys on the show, Colin Kennedy, on the college football recruiting show today at 4 o'clock Central. And they're going to talk about it a little then. But we'll have more tomorrow morning. And I guess just last thing, CB, yeah, OU did pick up a commitment yesterday from Cortland Giller, a three-star corner out of Klein Oak in Houston. I actually had Crystal Baldwin to Texas at one point when he was coming off of a visit to Texas. They were the clear leader. He hadn't silently committed yet, but talking to people in and around his camp, it was close to happening for Texas. And, you know, I had a close relationship with Cortland. I was who found him and put him on the map and posted him when he had like 20 or 30 something followers 2 years ago. And I asked him, I'm like, look, you can tell me no. It's all good. You can tell me no. But can I put in a crystal ball? And he was like, man, I don't care about that stuff. Like, do what you got to do. And so I went ahead and put it in. He ends up visiting OU a couple weeks later. They kind of even it out. So I'm still riding with my pick. He's not committed until the summer. Goes and visits OU, hits me up. Kind of just is basically like, yeah, they're my leader right now, and I'm going to commit earlier. And I was just like, all right, I get what you're saying. Can I change my thing? Of course, go for it. So it's kind of how it went down. And obviously committed to Oklahoma. I don't know what's going to get reported by other sites, but I can tell you right now, if that kid wanted to call and commit to Texas yesterday, they would have let him. They would have let him post it too. So definitely a loss. Obviously, there's bigger targets they could have whiffed on. But, I mean, Cortland Guillory is still a phenomenal player. I think he's going to start a lot of games at the Power 5 level in the SEC. So, I mean, like, not a great guy to miss out on, but it could always be worse. So, but, yeah, I guess – that's what I got to say about OU's commitment. I'll go ahead and bring the guys in right now.
The last fun fact I've got, Jordan, that relates to your the draft is one of those topics that there's so much we can do with it. But you realize Texas is going to have back-to-back recruiting classes now, 2020, 2021, where they produced a first-round pick. Would you like to know the last time Texas, Jordan, had back-to-back recruiting classes that produced first-round picks?
Is it in the 20th century?
You were in diapers.
Yeah. I'll do – wasn't it the 99 and 2000 classes were, like, ridiculous?
Not quite that far back, okay. But you've got to go to 2003 and 2004 with Michael Griffin and Brian Arakpo.
Okay. I couldn't tell if you were like their high school grad years when I was in diapers or like they got drafted and I was in diapers. That's why I did 99.
Okay. You needed the distinction. So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it, look, man, it's, dude, Eric didn't go through the misery that I've been through. Neither did you, Jordan, of following this program through. A pretty freaking forgettable decade of football at Texas. And
I was in college for it.
Yeah, man. It's pretty bad. And now to see where it is, like 11 draft picks, you have 11 guys go to the combine, all 11 get drafted. I'm not saying this is going to happen every year, but it really reinforces the sarcasm thing going in the right direction. That it's harder for me to jump on that bandwagon than maybe Eric per se, because he's new to this and I've still got maybe some of that PTSD left, but it's pretty damn fun to be following Texas football right now if you're a fan. And that hadn't been the case for a long time.
You and I have talked about this. I think one of my favorite moments from last year was the trip you and I made up to Baylor when you scooped me up and we had a chance to just
kind
of talk shop for a bit on all things, you know, Texas history and whatnot. But you know, you're right. Like it's kind of weird to think about it in a sense that, yeah, I mean, I'm bought in. Sark says the standard is the standard. And I'm sure you've probably heard that 10 times over from how many different coaches. You know, Keenan, you were in school. Jordan, obviously kind of, you know, I've spoken with you, you know, you and your pops growing up, going to UT football games. And it's just kind of, again, I don't want to sound repetitive, but I've talked about it a ton just from an outsider's perspective, being in Florida. My perception of what Texas football should be versus what it actually has been over the past decade and change.
It's interesting. The draft reinforced for me. This is what it took. It took 11 draft picks to reinforce to me. I'm like, you know what? That 2023 team, they were one of the best 2-3 teams in the country and legitimately had a chance to go win a national championship. And if they played Michigan, I don't know if Texas beats Michigan, but I know I wanted to see it.
Right.
So, it just reinforces it. No, you know what? It wasn't a fluke. And, you know, you lose 11 draft picks, but, Eric, we saw this team up close in the spring several times. Jordan, you were there. Keenan, I know you watched the spring game.
Yeah, I know enough.
There's a chance they could be better in 24 than they were in 23. As hard as that is to believe, they could top to bottom be more talented.
And I mean, Eric, I'm sorry, you're kind of excluded in this part of the conversation, but like growing up and going to the games and like having very, very brief memories of the Colt McCoy days, don't necessarily remember exact plays from games, but like I remember how you felt after. And I remember kind of how you felt watching and throughout the season. And I guess it was kind of just my introduction to college football. That's why I fell in love with college football. And Texas was so clearly at the apex of the sport. It is one of those programs that's truly at the apex. I think Texas is just below that right now. But like, even though Texas is easily a top program in college football right now, I'll be honest with you, it feels a lot different than when it did when I was young with Colt McCoy. Like, those teams felt so much more dominant and so much more, like, above everyone else than it does nowadays. I think a lot of that is just because we have more parity in college than ever because of NIL and the portal. But, like, knowing how good Texas is and knowing how they legitimately have a chance to be a better team next year, it doesn't feel like it. Like, it didn't feel like Texas was a true playoff team last year. It didn't feel like they're going to make the playoffs this year. I feel pretty damn confident about that.
Yeah.
But it really doesn't – like, I can't believe I just said that. And I know it's a 12-team playoff now, but, like, I don't know. There are times where maybe it's just because the last decade we all experienced of what the program looked like the last decade, but, like, there's a bunch of times now where it's just, like, it doesn't feel like reality sometimes. And I think it's just because it got sped up and so quick in so many years.
Yeah. I'll say this and then I'll get out of here and let the false start crew take over. But Jordan, what you were just talking about with, you know, how dominant Texas is. Now it kind of reminds me of the, you know, even when they were winning national championships, like when watching Texas win that national championship, I felt that way that you do right now. That like, okay, are they really? Until they actually did it, like, oh my gosh, as Jordan fades out. You didn't know it. You didn't know for sure until they actually did it. And when they actually did it, you're like, oh my God, they just won a national championship. And then I think because we saw kind of the gradual build under Mac Brown, but the build took maybe a little longer to reach the destination than you thought. And it's like, you know, are they ever going to get there? This was, you go from 5-7 and you're an abject disaster and you're wondering where this thing's going. And literally 2 years later, you're one play away from being in the national championship game. Like it's so you didn't, that's probably where some of the apprehension is. You didn't get that gradual, there wasn't that slow burn. It's like, boom, you're almost I know this is using negative connotations, but it's almost like you're a microwave dynasty. You just got heated up overnight pretty much. So
yeah. Jeff, definitely something that I'm looking forward to diving into a little bit, because I don't want to throw a wet blanket on things, but I do want to kind of ask that question and that you just laid out there, because like you said, with some of the other dynasties, some of those other top tier programs, we've seen that gradual climb. And I guess I'm wondering, trying to put it in perspective, does last year kind of count as somewhat of the gradual climb, considering you lost to OU, right? Still considering all the talent you had, you lost to OU, you lose to Washington. To me, it still feels like there's still areas that you can say, okay,
yeah,
it wasn't overnight. Still things to build on. That's just my feel.
Yeah. It's very, very similar. Not all that different to where Georgia was. I know Kirby did it by year two. Sark did it in year three. But Georgia went from, they were just kind of a blah program the last few years of Mark Richt. I think they were 7-6 Kirby's first year. And then, boom, they're playing in the national championship game year two. And really one desperation throw by Tua away from probably winning the thing. So, anyway, I'll get out of here. That's going to do it from It's Only an Hour. False Start, take it over. It's Eric. It's Keenan. And we'll be back to do it tomorrow.
Appreciate it, boys.
See you.
Peace out.